As a faint smile played over his lips, the man in the white headdress reached back and took hold of the leather-wrapped handle behind his head. His sword sang as he slid it from its scabbard on his back and swept it around, the curved blade gleaming in the midday sunlight.
"Now then."
His voice was deep and steady, unbroken as a desert horizon at sunset.
"Who among you has heard of Damascus steel?"
The ragtag trio of thugs gaped at him. The barrels of their tarnished six-shooters never wavered, though. All three stayed fixed on the man with the sword who was standing between them and the girl.
"I ain't heard of that,"
said the thug in the middle, who was fatter and filthier than the other two and did most of the talking.
"But I'll bet it ain't no match for good old-fashioned lead."
Sneering, he wagged the gun he was pointing.
"You will lose that bet."
One thing we're going to have to take into consideration on our way to the future is that a lot of people don't want to go there that way. These people feel that the dedicated whoopsie-daisy ecologist and wildlife lover would gladly, at the drop of a buttercup, fence you in and 10,000 others like you for the convenience and pleasure of 7 moldy, bat-winged herons who might even prefer to be someplace else.
"But Mother Nature put them there,"
the eco-freaks, to use their term, will say. "Mother Nature put me here, too, without asking, and you can tell her to put me back." This movement is bigger than you think, and one of its most vociferous spokesmen is Richard Neuhouse, who allows that nature is certainly okay in its place. However, he's the pastor of a Lutheran church in the heart of Brooklyn, where very little nature seeps in, and where there are an awful lot of people. Neuhouse wrote, "In defense of people," and his point is that we are part of the biosphere too, and let's not forget it. Neuhouse and his ilk rise up in righteous wrath when they hear some heiress in her Abercrombie and Fitch moccasins say
that the national parks are simply being ruined.
By whom, you ask?
By all those people, my dear.
It used to be, of course, that only her kind of people could get there.
But now, my dear, it's simply a swarming mob, and all those ghastly trailers.
Jesse scrambled away from the approaching figure and gibbered breathless obscenities. He backed right into a night flyer, whose beady vermilion eyes didn't blink, but instead continued gazing up in awe at the monster Red Elk had called the Old One. Turning his gaze back to the Old One, Jesse recalled the other name, the one that described the creature who made men cannibals, the Wendigo. He could feel the horrible intelligence crawling around his mind like some bloated and persistent sewer rat, uncovering his insecurities and his frailties, and reveling in them.
"Time to jump ship, eh, Jesse?"
it wheedled in its guttural, droning voice.
"You get a little uncomfortable or a little inconvenienced and you split town?"
"No," Jesse thought, scuttling away from the approaching monster. He thrashed his head from side to side to shake free of the voice, but it only deepened, lost its specious jocularity.
"You're not going anywhere, are you? You already know the ending to this story, and it doesn't end well for you, does it, Jesse?"